Live from the Civic Media World Headquarters in Madison, Wisconsin, it's the Todd Albaugh Show. And now, pursuing truth wherever it may lead, here's your host, Todd Albaugh.
Across Wisconsin and on the Civic Media Radio Network, streaming worldwide in the Civic Media app. Good afternoon. I'm Todd Albaugh. Along with our producers, Mr. Aaron Zommers and Jeff Perry, this is a special edition of the Todd Albaugh Show, the Trump Criminal Indictment. Joining this hour, Trigby Olson, Wisconsin native and former state and national Republican strategist, now a senior advisor to the Lincoln Project. Matt Flynn Direct, our Civic Media colleague and attorney, former chair of the Wisconsin Democratic Party and host of Matt Flynn Direct. Charles Franklin, director of the Marquette Law School poll and professor emeritus at UW-Madison. But joining us first, our colleague Pat Kreitlow, host of Up North News, former Democratic state senator of Wisconsin, and now joining us live from Green Bay, where he is on location to cover the Wisconsin Democratic State Convention. Pat Kreitlow, welcome in on this historic day.
Nice to be here. Thank you for the invitation.
My pleasure. We're going to get right to it. We're watching. We're going to go to the special counsel here when that comes up. So we may have to cut you off and then join us after the break. What's your knee-jerk reaction to this special counsel or whether the Trump indictment?
Not good. Not good at all. There's something about, you know, stealing nuclear secrets that tells me this is a serious matter. And that's probably the one thing I can say in favor of justice being done, because this is also somebody who went through two impeachment trials. Everything in those trials rang true, but he still avoided conviction in both. And all it takes is one juror in this case to do the same thing. So Pat, justice is being done through the indictment process, but whether that justice will be seen all the way through for, again, having nuclear secrets will be another matter.
Pat, we're going to interrupt and go straight to Washington, D.C. now. Special Counsel Jack Smith on live right now. We take the audio.
To the highest ethical standards, and they will continue to do so as this case proceeds. It's very important for me to note that the defendants in this case must be presumed innocent until proven guilty beyond a reasonable doubt in a court of law. To that end, my office will seek a speedy trial in this matter, consistent with the public interest and the rights of the accused. We very much look forward to presenting our case to a jury of citizens in the Southern District of Florida. In conclusion, I would like to thank the dedicated public servants of the Federal Bureau of Investigation, with whom my office is conducting this investigation, and who work tirelessly every day upholding the rule of law in our country. I'm deeply proud to stand shoulder to shoulder with them. Thank you very much.
Very short statement there, audio courtesy of CNN. The big quote there, just before we actually went to him, was, quote, "We have one set of laws in this country, and they apply to everybody," according to Special Counsel Jack Smith. Pat, as a former state senator, all elected officials, regardless whether it's state or federal, take the same oath, basically, to uphold the Constitution of, in your case, Wisconsin, but also the United States of America. It would appear the evidence that we've seen so far, former President Trump did not uphold that.
No. And again, the evidence is damning that this is somebody who has consistently put himself above the rule of law and has consistently believed that there is always a way for him to evade prosecution or accountability. It was his way throughout his business career. It worked for him in 2016. When it didn't work for him in 2020, he tried to essentially weasel around it. And now he's going to try to finagle his way out of this. It is simply still in keeping with who he is.
A couple of minutes before we go to our first break, you're in Green Bay. You're going to be at the Wisconsin State Democratic Party convention this weekend. What do you think? How does this play with Democrats? Is it going to be a jubilation? Is there caution, a cautious optimism? What's your takeaway? I know it hasn't started yet, but what do you anticipate?
Well, I expect that it'll be a little more positive than negative simply because of today's news that Congressman Mike Gallagher, who represents this area in Green Bay, has made it official that he will not challenge Senator Tammy Baldwin. So folks will be feeling even more positive. The Trump news only helps, as does the U.S. Supreme Court decision striking down racist gerrymandered maps in Alabama. So there's all kinds of reasons why there will be positive feelings at the convention. But again, with apologies for including that negative note off the top, you know, it's one thing to bring an indictment. It's another thing to watch somebody who has consistently avoided accountability, perhaps work like never before to try to evade accountability again.
About a minute and a half left. You're also one of the founders of the Courier Newsroom in northern Wisconsin, Up North News. As a journalist, was on Eau Claire TV for a long time. Just as from a journalistic standpoint, Pat, historic, right, to try to cover all this?
It is absolutely historic. It harkens back to everything about Watergate and looking back to President Ford's pardon of President Nixon so that he did not face accountability for serious crimes and not upholding the Constitution. And, you know, now this is something that, again, like the two impeachments, will always follow Trump, will always follow the presidency from this point onward. It shows that we are divided as we weren't back in the days of Watergate. And look, however way it comes out, as I said, the fact that he is being held to account and will go to trial is at least one victory for the rule of law in this state, in this country, no matter how divided we are.
Pat Kreitlow, you can catch his show Up North News every morning from 6 until 8. Thanks so much, Pat. We appreciate you joining us. Have a great convention in Green Bay.
You're
Stay
welcome.
Tuned. Our special report on the Trump criminal indictment continues after this. You're listening to the Todd Allball Show, a special report, and you're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network across Wisconsin. Welcome back to a special edition of the Todd Allball Show, the Trump criminal indictment. You're listening to special live coverage on the Civic Media Radio Network across Wisconsin. It is now 2:15 in the afternoon. Just heard from the special counsel, Jack Smith, on the indictment of former President Donald Trump. We are being joined this hour by Trigby Olson, Wisconsin native and former state and national Republican strategist, now senior advisor to the Lincoln Project. Also at the bottom of the hour, Charles Franklin, the director of the Marquette Law School poll and professor emeritus at UW-Madison, will join us for what voters may think and react to this news today. But right now, we're going to the former chair, of the Wisconsin Democratic Party. He is an attorney, which I love about him because he knows the law. He has a great host and my colleague as well here at Civic Media. It is Matt Flynn of Matt Flynn Direct. Matt, reporting today that Trump is reportedly now facing at least 7 charges initially, now over 30 charges, which have just been unsealed, one of which under the Espionage Act. His attorney last night, Jim Trusty, one of the attorneys, confirmed last night on CNN, also charges of obstruction of justice, destruction of falsification of records, conspiracy, and false statements. We just heard from the special counsel. Matt, what is your knee-jerk reaction?
Yeah, I think this is a sad day, but an essential day for American democracy. It's always a sad day when a former president is indicted, and it has never happened before in our nation's history in a federal court. But it was essential. And here, let me boil this down very quickly. Initially, the reports were as a 7-count indictment, as you say. But just clarify, Jack Smith just spoke. I watched him speak. And they issued the entire indictment and made it public. It's actually 37 counts against Trump. 31 of them, frankly, do relate to the Espionage Act. Another 6 go from conspiracy to fraudulent concealment of documents. There's various ways of saying you conceal documents, and then also false statements and lying, basically, to the FBI, the Department of Justice, which is a felony. Now, here's my take on it. One of the most powerful things in the indictment, and I'm going to read it right now very, very quickly. Jack Smith did a great job. I was impressed. It was a very terse statement he made. There's a lot of character. But here's what it says in the indictment. It says, the documents that Trump took and showed to people, quote, included information regarding defense and weapons capabilities of both the U.S. and foreign countries, U.S. nuclear programs, potential vulnerabilities of U.S. and allies to military attack, and plans for retaliation in the event of attack. Trump shared a Pentagon plan of attack, and I know that it was against Iran. He didn't say it in the indictment, and shared a classified map related to a military operation against Iran. This was a precautionary document. If they attack us, we got to wipe them out. He did that up in Bedminster, New Jersey, waved it around. That was the time that they loaded those documents in Florida, put them on a plane, flew them to New Jersey to hide them from the Department of Justice. Now, his valet, they call him a valet. He's a body man. He's a guy, you know, in politics, guy, you know, I want a cheeseburger. Okay, here's a cheeseburger, that kind of thing. The body man. The body man, he told to move boxes, to quote, to conceal them from his lawyers and from the FBI. That's a felony. This poor guy, Walter Nett, I don't know why I say he's a poor guy. He's a Navy veteran, retired former chief petty officer, enlisted man. He's going to do whatever he's told. And depends on what Trump did say to him. But if Trump said that to him, which is what they say in the indictment, he has a lot of exposure. So bottom line, he is in a world of trouble. It's in Miami. One of the things I don't like, that I don't like, is that the case so far has been assigned to Eileen Mercedes Cannon. The fix is in. She's the one that took a dive for him when it came to the initial investigation, slowed it up, put a special master in. She was reversed twice by the Fifth Circuit. And she can put sand in the gears if she wants to. So stay tuned. Stay tuned.
Matt, before we go to Trigby, on that point, some of the reporting that I've seen today on Ross's story in particular suggests that it could be that Judge Cannon might just do the initial arraignment and the long-term case could, keyword, could go to someone else. With your experience as an attorney, would that be common or usually the person, the judge getting the arraignment, does the whole thing?
That would be uncommon in Wisconsin. In Wisconsin, judges are picked on, they're called the wheel. It's a random assignment. So if I go in and file a case or have my messenger go in and file a case, the clerk, you know, reaches in and at random pulls out the names of one of the justices. That judge will stay throughout it, except that they occasionally will use a magistrate judge to handle some things. Well, Eileen Mercedes Cannon is not a magistrate judge. She's a full-fledged judge. I'm very concerned she'll stay on. Having said that, I've never tried a case in Miami. So it may be that they do it different down there in the wheel. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But everybody who knows anything about law down there has got to understand the fix is in. She is servile to Trump, deferential to Trump, and it will be a disaster if she stays on it, because she'll throw sand in the gears and the whole thing will be very, very difficult.
Trigby Olson, a Wisconsin native, a former Wisconsin longtime political operative and strategist here, went on to bigger and better things across the nation, worked at one time for former U.S. Senator and presidential candidate John McCain, and has done international work on democracy as well. Former Republican now, working as a senior advisor for the Lincoln Project. Trigby, thanks for joining us as you do each and every week, usually on Wednesdays. Just so happened this week it was on Friday. Timely indeed. What's your first reaction to today's news?
Well, I think, you know, Matt hit the nail on the head. It's a sad day for America when the former president is being indicted under the Espionage Act. It's another chink in those things that had made America exceptional in the eyes of the world and truly had separated us from a lot of other places. Now, that being said, we are a nation that's built on the rule of law. And I think at times we've forgotten, because Donald Trump uses the rules of democracy, but he doesn't play by the rules of democracy. We forget that. Now, you know, when you have people like the Speaker of the House, Kevin McCarthy, who admittedly is kind of an empty suit, he's a guy who wants to be, and one day maybe he'll be out doing the conservative lounge act thing. Maybe he and Scott Walker could be a duet. Right. But, you know, or he could open for Scott. But, you know, when you have the Speaker of the House basically saying Biden indicted, you know, the president of the United States or the attorney general don't indict people in the United States. A grand jury of your peers indicts in the United States. And so, you know, you're seeing the Trump people react hard. You're seeing a lot of the people who are running for the Republican nomination trying to have it both ways. And then we're hearing what people like Mitch McConnell have said. Oh, wait, he hasn't said anything, has he, Todd? Yeah, I saw you and Matt wondering what McConnell had said.
I missed that.
To the best of my knowledge, nothing. So you have those pieces going on simultaneously. But I think what's most important, and I've been following on Facebook, my peeps back home in Western Wisconsin primarily, and the activist class, even the activist class that doesn't support Trump, is rallying to Trump. And the idea that this doesn't make Trump stronger for a Republican primary is a fallacy. This helps him in a Republican primary.
Matt, I want to go back to Trigvy and get the this whole narrative, as Trigvy always reminds us of the Republican side of weaponization. I want to ask Trigvy about that. But before, Trigvy brought up a great point, Matt, and from as an attorney, from a legal perspective, really important. As we hear this narrative from Republicans talking about the weaponization and, oh, Joe Biden did this, yes or no, it was a great stroke by Merrick Garland to appoint a special counsel to put that layer between the political side and the legal side.
I think that's exactly right. And not only that, if you took a look at Jack Smith, he has a lot of character. He has a lot of poise and he has a lot of ability and has a good reputation. They didn't just put some hack in there. And so what it does is it insulates Merrick Garland, who in turn insulates Joe Biden. And this is a career prosecutor. This is not a guy who wants to be a judge. He wants to do it. No, this is a guy who likes prosecuting cases, and he's very honest. So the bottom line, I think that's exactly right. And I echo what Trigvy said. It is a sad day for America. I take no pleasure in this. And if the people of the Democratic Convention take any of it, they're misplaced, and I disassociate myself from that. This is very sad. But remember, this happened in France. It happened in Israel. There are first world democracies where occasionally this happens, and there is a rule of law. And we're talking our nuclear secrets, our attack plans, for Pete's sake. What the guy was hiding this stuff? Why was he hiding this stuff?
Well, we're going to get to that in a minute. I'm not sure hiding is the right word when it's in a ballroom at Mar-a-Lago. But before we get to that, Trigvy, the narrative, as you remind us so often on this show every week from the Republican Party, of which you and I are former members of, the narrative already is this weaponization, quote unquote, of politics and the law against Donald Trump from the Republican side.
Yeah, but it's not only that. It's you have people like Marsha Blackburn and, I mean, a slew of them, Ted Cruz, Josh Hawley. They're saying things like there's two-tier justice. What they're trying to do is create fear amongst these people. And quite honestly, you're kind of seeing this. I mean, I have people who I know back home, one who's chair of a county Republican Party, who's going on and on about how they're scared that, you know, the radical left is going to weaponize justice against people like themselves. That's just ridiculous. And then you have people like Derek Van Orten, who's peddling, well, what about Hillary's 1,000 emails? And then you got Glory Days Walker, his tweet about wagging the dog because of Biden and something that even Fox News says isn't true, right? Like, where is the responsibility amongst these people? They're trying to scare these people. And when in reality, Donald Trump is going to be afforded, unlike people I know in places like Russia or Belarus or non-democratic places, Donald Trump was afforded a grand jury of his peers. Donald Trump will be afforded legal counsel. He will go in front of a jury if he so chooses. The rule of law is working with Donald Trump. There's nothing weaponized about it at all. And the only thing that is being weaponized here is Republicans trying to build narratives of fear at their base. And why they're doing that on behalf of Donald Trump, of all people, who is running around leaving the most valuable assets of the United States, the nuclear secrets about how the American people are defended from places like China and Russia, is beyond me.
About a minute before the break, a minute and a half or so, Matt, real quick, was watching CNN's coverage last night. I think it was Van Jones who brought this up. What do you think about this theory that Trump knew this was coming and that part of the reason he decided to run is because when it comes to the legal system, this probably won't be calendared until late spring or summer going into early fall next year after the New York case. And the theory is that he'll simply try to run out the clock, get reelected, and his own Justice Department could legally dismiss the charges.
That is all true. And it was highly speculated back when he did announce. Remember how early he announced? He announced last fall. It was precisely to try to, first of all, deter the prosecution. He didn't do a normal campaign at the beginning. He didn't have staff. He didn't have the right stuff. So I think that's exactly true. And it will be, especially if it's Eileen Mercedes Cannon. She'll drag this out till the cows come home. And it's going to go beyond November of 24. And the question is he benefited by this, maybe in a Republican Party? I don't see how he's benefited in a general election, but I could be wrong.
No. We're going to come back, talk about all of that. Charles Franklin will join us on What the Voters Say. Stay with us. This is a special report on the Todd Allball Show, the Trump criminal indictment on the Civic Media Radio Network across Wisconsin. To a special edition of the Todd Allball Show, the Trump criminal indictment. Joining us this half hour, senior advisor to the Lincoln Project, a former Republican strategist, Trigvi Olson, Matt Flynn, our civic media colleague, an attorney, former chair of the Wisconsin Democratic Party, and a host of Matt Flynn Direct. And this hour, Charles Franklin, director of the Marquette Law School poll and professor emeritus at UW-Madison. We welcome you back to our special ongoing coverage this half hour. Gentlemen, we appreciate you all being with us today. I want to start off, Trigvi, with something you brought up over the break. And Matt, your response to juries.
Yeah, so, you know, my question to Matt was, how do you ensure that you don't end up with some MAGA sleeper on your jury?
Yeah, no, that's an excellent question. In what's called the voir dire process, that's where you question the jurors, they will be given a certain amount of what are called peremptory strikes, 3, 4, whatever it is. And the only thing that's forbidden, especially for the prosecution, is to use them racially. You can't, in the old days, they would just strike black jurors. But as long as you don't do it racially, you can do it for any reason whatsoever. And they'll ask a lot of skillful questions. Do you have any bumper stickers in your car? Active in the party, any party or any of your relatives? What do you think about this issue? And you can build a composite of what they're like. They will strike the most extreme MAGA candidates. They'll also strike the most extreme, you know, anti-Trump Democrats. Now, what's left? There could be sleepers. The worst thing that happens is what's called a hung jury, 12 jurors. So it could be 11-1, 10-2, 9-3, 8-4 for conviction. If that happens, the judge gives what's called an Allen charge. It's called a dynamite charge. Brings them into the courtroom and just lashes them and tries to make them come together. If that doesn't work, they declare a mistrial and the prosecution can prosecute them all over again. But these are good prosecutors. They should be able to sniff out the real extremists.
Matt, you brought this up at the beginning of this special report and this special hour. The unknown here is doing this in Miami versus D.C. There was another pundit last night on one of the shows I was watching that brought this up. The facts may not matter. And you know, as an attorney, sometimes, you know, a good attorney can get around the facts with this jury. But the point being that doing this in Miami, very different than D.C., where grand juries tend to go along with the law, where in Miami, you're going to have a lot of folks who are, you know, there's a big Cuban Republican movement who hate communism, who hates big government, who buys into all these theories of the deep state. Is it going to be tougher for the prosecution, in this case, the Department of Justice, to get a jury of the peers that's going to adhere more to the law?
Yeah, I'll say two things and I'll break it on your air here. First of all, there was one of the acts committed in New Jersey, Bedminster, New Jersey. That can bootstrap all the rest in. I do not know why they didn't try that. They were worried about a venue moat. The second thing, though, it reminds me of the O.J. Simpson trial. When O.J. murdered those people, and he flat out murdered these people, it was in a venue that would have been very favorable to the prosecution. The prosecutor decided to be progressive about it, so he moved it into L.A., and O.J. is acquitted. What I'm concerned about in this thing is, you're right, you have a lot of Cuban refugees and a lot of other, Venezuela, a lot of other people, Colombia, who very rightly don't like socialism. This isn't about socialism. This is about our nuclear secrets. This is about our attack plans against Iran, and that's got to be emphasized. But there is a danger in bringing it down there that you'll get at least a hung jury because of that characteristic.
Thanks for the clarification. That's why you're here. We appreciate you. Let's go now to Charles Franklin, who runs one of the best polls, I believe, in the country. Of course, I'm a little biased, but the Marquette Law School poll has been spot on time after time and election after election. Charles, you came out with a recent poll at Marquette Law School. Were you looking at things like this? And maybe not this, obviously, the indictment per se, but did you look at this subject of Trump and where voters are looking at when it comes to the primary for the 2024 election?
Sure. So we finished a poll in May, just 2 weeks ago, and it shows what all the national, this is a national poll, not a Wisconsin poll, shows what all the polls are showing, that Trump is at around 50% in the GOP primary. I think we had him at 48, but he's very close to 50. With DeSantis at about 25, and everybody else is below 10% down in single digits. And that's very consistent with other polling. Trump, in his favorability ratings among Republicans, fell off by about 10 points during the fall last year, but has recovered almost all of that as of our May poll. Now, obviously, the indictment comes after that poll. But I think one of the important things is that beginning in September last year, we repeatedly asked a simple question. Do you think Donald Trump had classified documents at Mar-a-Lago? Just yes or no. Over 65% of the general public say that he did.
Wow.
But among Republicans, 62% say he did not have classified documents in Mar-a-Lago. It's 92% of Democrats who say he did, of course.
Sure.
So I think we're seeing some of that play out. When we would listen to what people said, they would say, no, I don't think he had them because I think he declassified them. You know, so it was clear they'd sort of absorbed that message that whether the documents were there or not, they could still say they weren't classified. Now we have the charges, the specific claims being made. And so maybe that changes opinion some. On the other hand, look at the rhetoric from Republican politicians last night, and it very clearly skirted the question of what he had at Mar-a-Lago and focused on whether this was a politically motivated prosecution. And so you see a very different perspective and rhetoric from Republicans, while Democrats are focusing on the documents themselves. And, you know, just earlier, a few minutes ago, the indictment was unsealed. So I've read through that now. And so there are very specific charges being made there.
Fascinating number, Charles, on whether people believed there were classified documents at Mar-a-Lago. Now we know, according to the Department of Justice, there were, in fact, we've seen the photos. Trigvi Olsen, how does this, you know, this gets to this big story. We don't have time to get into the whole story, but Chris Licht, the CEO, former CEO of CNN, now booted out. And a lot of that was over the Trump propaganda town hall about what is the truth. Are the numbers that Charles just cited, is there any chance that people are going to look at this, Republicans in the primary, and say, we believe the truth? It comes down to, you could, is it raining, is it not raining, but you can't agree on if it's raining or not.
Well, I think Chris's situation at CNN may have had something to do with that, although, you know, the fact that ratings were down 40% since he took over probably also had something to do with his getting pushed out. But
Correct. But
the bigger point, I mean, a couple of things I think that are important as Charles was talking. One, I can tell you when you're sitting in the room mapping out a Republican presidential campaign, because
you've done it
there twice, you sit there and you only think about three things. So you think about Iowa, New Hampshire, and South Carolina, and how it plays in those three states, because the truth of the matter is, in the modern Republican nominating process, no one has won without winning two of those three, has won the nomination. Second thing you think about is, what is the buzz look like in terms of donations and donors, major donors usually, but in Trump's case, that doesn't really matter because it's primarily small dollar donors. And the reality, then the third thing that you think about is, okay, I win Iowa or New Hampshire, and then South Carolina is going to be the tiebreaker. Mm. How do I sustain things in what everybody's out of money after Iowa and New Hampshire? So how do you sustain things on earned media momentum? And again, I don't know how much that applies to Trump. Trump's vulnerability, if you're Chris LaCivita, who's running Donald Trump's campaign, who incidentally, for Wisconsin listeners, Chris LaCivita is the guy who literally swift boated John Kerry. He also is the guy who ran Ron Johnson's campaign. Chris LaCivita knows how to win in Wisconsin in tough environments. He's really good. Not your father's Donald Trump. If you're LaCivita, you're thinking, as long as we can keep the field divided, and as long as I can keep Trump above 42-43%, I'm liking my chances on those three things. Because money is going to come in because of the indictment and rallying. His donors will rally. He's got a good shot at winning Iowa or New Hampshire and probably South Carolina. And then that momentum play, he's in pretty good shape because as long as the field's divided.
Matt Flynn, we appreciate you so much for joining us. I know you have to go because you're getting ready for your own program. This coverage will continue on Matt's show at the 3 o'clock hour. Matt Flynn direct across the entire Civic Media Radio Network. You can get the program on the Civic Media app. Do not miss it. Matt, what are you going to focus on and what's coming up? And I'll give you the final word before you have to run here to your own show.
Very quickly, I think what these guys, what everybody has said, Trigby and Charles is correct. But there's one fly in the ointment that I am very curious about. And that is, why did a guy who wouldn't even read briefing papers, who had to be given them in cartoons, suddenly go to all this trouble to hide it, lie about it, and move it? Did he intend to monetize it? Now, if that fact comes out, why he did this, and it in any respect involved conveyance to a foreign power, then I don't care what the jury's like in Miami or what country they fled or any of this business. People are really not going to like that. Mm-hmm. So I'll sit back and I'll look. And that's one thing that puzzles the heck out of me. A guy who never read these papers, who wanted them, you know, boiled down in two sentences with an emoji or something. Why is he doing this? These are complicated papers.
Right.
Why is he doing this?
Great question, Matt. I'm sure your callers will want to discuss that with you. Do not miss Matt Flynn direct coming up at the top of the hour. Matt, thanks for taking the time and going out of your way. We always appreciate your legal analysis and your expertise. Thank you so much, my friend.
Great being on with you guys. Thank you.
Thank you, Matt. Go to Charles Franklin. Charles, your opinion a little bit, I'm not trying to ask an opinion or analysis politically, but just in you've followed elections for a long time. You've looked at the numbers. When you look at things like what Matt just said, factual things, such as, you know, did Trump sell secrets for monetary purposes? I want to be careful. We don't know that, but Matt raises this good point. It could be a possibility. These more severe charges, if proven true in court, do you think that the tighter or the stronger the facts, are people, even Republicans, moved by something like that?
Well, I think it's a real challenge to move opinion when we are so committed to our heroes on the right or on the left, for that matter. I think that the indictment lays out the documents that he retained and the steps that he went through to not hand over or have looked over a number of boxes that he moved out of the storage area to his residence and so on. So there's pretty strong charges there. There's nothing alleged in the indictment at this point concerning distributing the documents anywhere else, though there are two incidents that are cited in which he apparently showed documents to other people, people coming to interview him for a book, and another circumstance in which he apparently did show classified information to them, and they were certainly not cleared, and he at that point was out of office. So there are some allegations there, but most of the charges are about the retention of the documents and the steps that he took to conceal them or not hand them over to the FBI.
And quickly, Charles, in your polling at Marquette Law School poll, what do you feel the base is? The people who are going to vote for Trump come hell or high water?
Well, I think that's probably in the range of 30% of Republicans, but there's certainly another 20% to 25% that are easily persuadable to vote for him. What we really see is that over 70% of Republicans are favorable to Trump, but about 50% will choose him first among the primary list. So there is some slippage there. And what you hear in focus groups all the time is concern that he comes with baggage and maybe we Republicans should move to an alternative candidate in order to win the presidency, not allow Joe Biden to be reelected. So I think that's the place where slippage could occur.
How do you move those Republican voters in a presidential campaign? We'll ask a guy who's done it before, Trigvi Olson, along with Charles Franklin. More on our special report, the Trump criminal indictment, on Civic Media after this. Welcome back to a special edition of the Todd Allball Show, a special report on the Trump criminal indictment. You are listening to Civic Media across Wisconsin. Time now, 2:50. That is 10 minutes before the top of the hour. We'll have a special network news update for you, and then a special edition of Matt Flynn Direct. We appreciate him joining us this past hour. We are still joined for our final segment by Trigvi Olson, who is a former Republican like myself, former Republican strategist, now senior advisor to the Lincoln Project across the country. Also, we have Professor Charles Franklin, the director of the Marquette Law School poll, and Professor Emeritus of UW-Madison. Gentlemen, we thank you for being with us again on this historic day. Before the break, Charles was talking about these numbers and these base Republican voters, Trigvi, a universe of anywhere maybe 30 to 35% plus that just aren't going to go anywhere. You've run presidential campaigns across this country before on the Republican side. As someone who's been in the trenches, what do you do if you're Ron DeSantis's camp or Chris Christie, or go right down the line? What's the play?
Well, I think you gave two examples who have very different strategic objectives going in. I mean, Chris Christie's in the race. He can say he's running to win. He's running to tear Donald Trump apart. DeSantis has a real challenge because, you know, and Charles and I were talking about this offline. The issue is, in a general election, DeSantis has to be able to get the people in a state like Wisconsin who voted Evers Johnson to support him. Okay, because they voted Biden and then they voted Evers, but they voted for Johnson. Those are the people who decide a general election. But to get to the point where those people matter, he's got to keep the whole Trump coalition together. And if he takes Trump out, how does he take Trump out without alienating those hardcore Trump people who aren't going to vote for anybody else? And losing 4% on either side of that, which is kind of called the Bannon line, because Steve Bannon used to talk about it quite a bit, either the Bannon line or the inverse Bannon line, that's a real challenge for any of these guys, which is why they're acting the way they are, quite frankly.
And Charles, you said during the break, what were DeSantis's numbers up to at one point?
Yeah. We're looking at DeSantis's favorability among Republican voters that are favorable to Donald Trump. Mm-hmm. And that number had climbed near 80% favorable to DeSantis and to Trump. It's fallen off in the last couple of months quite a bit, down to about 60% favorable. But the point is that DeSantis was viewed very favorably by Trump supporters. Mm-hmm. And so you could imagine those Trump supporters turning to DeSantis as an alternative if they thought Trump was unelectable or too damaged or too much baggage. But as Trump has now directly started attacking DeSantis, those numbers have come down. He's not in as good a position. But the challenge really is, how does anybody in the party critique Trump in a way that's damaging to Trump and not damaging to themselves at the same time?
I mean, just strictly from a number standpoint, based on your experience in campaigns and polling, to bring someone, your opponent's numbers down, usually by standing up with them and defending them, is probably not the way to do that.
The approach, right?
Probably aren't going to be real successful. And so, Trigvi, if you're, you know, and I mean, besides Ron DeSantis, really, who do you consider right now a top tier candidate as any sort of a potential challenger to Trump?
So again, as I was saying in the previous break, you know, when you're sitting there in the room, you're only thinking about Iowa, New Hampshire, and South Carolina.
Sure.
At the end of the day, because there's so much momentum there, right? If you don't win those two, you're done. You're Marco Rubio. Or if you say, I'm going to wait till we get to Florida, which is like fifth in the process, you're Rudy Giuliani. How did that work out? The process leaves you behind. So Donald Trump, beating Donald Trump in Iowa with multiple candidates in the field is going to be really hard, because it seems like the evangelicals are sticking with them. Ron DeSantis isn't the likely first place that those evangelicals would go in a race with like Nikki Haley and Mike Pence in it, right? So if you're the DeSantis campaign, you're probably sitting there saying, all right, New Hampshire is where we make our stand, right? But and there's some argument there because independents can vote. You know, there's no Democrat primary. In theory, Democrats can cross over and vote in New Hampshire. But Donald Trump won New Hampshire last time, and he won it pretty strongly. So that's a challenge. And then you go to South Carolina. You got Nikki and Tim in the race. So it kind of takes that off. And then, quite frankly, it's South Carolina. I mean, Trump's got to be hovering up. If he's at 48 in Wisconsin, he's at 62 in South Carolina. So, and by the time you get to Florida, if Ron DeSantis has lost the first four after that, Nevada, no one's going to be talking about it. You're not going to be getting to Florida. Right. And so it's, you know, it's the prisoner's dilemma. That was the thing in 16. Kasich didn't want to get up. They were all for a head-to-head against Donald Trump, but they all wanted to be the guy in the head-to-head race.
3 minutes left. I'm looking for a quick answer, Trigvi, but I just want to get your take on this. We've seen some of the pictures. I haven't looked at all of them. I think you've seen more than I have. There are pictures in this indictment of nuclear, well, presumably nuclear secrets in the Trump ballroom, in the linen closet. I mean, how bizarre is this?
I mean, I said to somebody else today, if you were to walk into a Hollywood studio and pitch that indictment, they'd laugh you right out.
Right.
And the idea that some of the most classified secrets that we have, and the nuclear, certainly strategies for nuclear war, are some of the most closely held things that the United States government has, and the vulnerabilities that we have to attack, sitting around in a shower, for God's sakes, there's no way that that stuff isn't in other people's hands. The one thing that I will say is, and this came up earlier, if it is true that he was trying to sell them, then I think all bets are off. It's over if they have proof of that.
Charles, a quick answer, if I could, please. Just based on the numbers, based on your knowledge of elections and history in America, looking at where Trump's numbers are now, pretty tough for someone to overtake those numbers just from a numbers standpoint in a primary at this point, unless what Trigvi just cited.
I think there's no question he's the front runner, and anybody that tries to tell that story differently is just wrong. On the other hand, in past elections, we have seen single-digit candidates get their moment in the sun and zoom up in the standings for a few weeks, only usually then to collapse. So I do think it's possible that some of these others will get their moment to make the case, but the big challenge is, do they succeed in keeping that momentum or not? I wouldn't bet for it.
Trigvi, I'll give you the last word, 20 to 30 seconds. Have we seen the biggest news so far, or are there more bombshells to come?
No, I think Jack Smith's investigating what happened on 1-6, so there's that coming too. I would just say, you know, John McCain was at 2% at one point in July. He came back and was the nominee. Scott Walker was at 30%, and he was out in a Vegas lounge act within 2 years. So, conservative Vegas lounge act. So, you know, that stuff can change quickly.
Trigvi Olson, Lincoln Project, Charles Franklin, Professor Emeritus at UW-Madison and head of the Marquette Law School Poll, we thank you. This has been a special report of the Todd Allbald Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. Aaron Zommer's Board Game of the Week is back next week. Stay tuned now for a special edition of Matt Flynn Direct. The Trump indictment special report continues. Don't go anywhere. This is the Todd Allbald Show on the Civic Media Radio Network.